Welcome to Talos Takes, the security podcast for everyone from the C-suite to the front lines.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Talos Takes. This is Jonathan Bunshaw again. Today, I am joined by Vanya from the Talos Outreach team and Andrew from the Threat Intelligence team.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
So you guys worked together on a blog post that went up recently on the Talos website, which I'll be obviously linking to in the show notes here. And it's all over our social media at this point, so it's pretty easy for folks to find. But it's on the Promete botnet. Am I saying that right?
I think so.
I believe so. It's how I've been saying it.
So, for starters, can you guys kind of give me a quick overview of what this botnet is exactly? Like, if you're kind of giving an elevator pitch to somebody about why they should care about this particular botnet and why we've been following it, you know, kind of what would be your pitch to them?
As a botnet, Promete is structurally exactly what you'd expect it to be. You know, it's a network of infected hosts controlled by the threat actor, you know, to be used by them for whatever purposes they have in mind. In this case, at least from our observations, this appears to be primarily having, you know, a giant mining farm for generating Monero cryptocurrency. This essentially, for now, makes the threat actor financially motivated. This also coincides, you know, with its nearly universal victimology that we were observing also. I think one of the more interesting attributes of it is it has significant modularity. It possesses several separate components outside of the main bot component for all of its sort of different functions that it has, such as reconnaissance, dropping the miner itself, attempting to infect additional hosts, updating its other components, and in this case, now dropping a web shell, as well as any other things, you know, its maintainer might add on later.
Yeah, when I was doing my initial research in 2020, there were like two distinct branches of Promete botnet, and like one was distinctly designed to spread the other parts and Monero mining, while the other one is very similar, or more similar to what we observed is from November this last year, which Andrew actually spotted.
Yeah, so what did, like you said, Vanya, that you kind of did the initial research on this a couple years ago. What kind of prompted you guys to go back and take a look at this again and say, you know, I think, you know, was it just an uptick in activity that you were seeing, or what stood out to you with that you were like, oh, we should revisit this?
I initially wrote an intel brief on it before we sort of combined additional information Vanya was able to collect into what we have as the blog post now. The sort of kickoff for that, though, is like in this specific instance, the analysis was very sort of bottom-up driven. We have these sort of different monitoring hunting scanners going about varying degrees of automation, sort of proactively digging through our data sources, looking for threads of suspicious activity, you know, that might warrant additional research and analysis. In this case, one of the more sort of manually driven things that I have sort of picked up on Promete's like primary execution command line. And from there, we can kind of work backwards in the data to reconstruct sort of a linked timeline of activity. Interestingly, in this case, like not only did we have an immense amount of visibility into what was going on, like command line, things being called, the network calls, but most of the infrastructure it was using was also still alive. Like it had been rotated out. And so we were able to get a much clearer picture of what was going on at the time. Promete has this like Promete CGI network indicator that sort of very obviously or glaringly sort of ties things to this actor, as well as we also saw a direct overlap in the Monero wallet ID, which was observed fairly early on in the analysis. So like once I knew what I was looking at after the sort of timeline reconstruction, I could went to Vanya since he did the original research on this threat, and we sort of compared notes on what I was seeing now, what he had seen before, and where like the differences were showing up.
Yeah, it was interesting to revisit that Promete from the initial research. I remember I had a lot of fun trying to guess what the value was, because it depends on an external existence of an external file and the actual content of the file. But Andrew, in his initial command line that he found, he actually knew exactly what the contents should be, so it was much easier to deobfuscate at least the first layer of deobfuscation in the main module.
So Vanya, I know in this particular case, you were heavily involved in sinkholing traffic during this research process. And then in the blog, we specifically called out that we think that the botnet could be up to like 10,000 infected systems to, you know, kind of, because I don't know. So I really am straight up asking you, what does sinkholing traffic do and what can it kind of tell us about the botnet in this particular case? Like, how do we end up with that 10,000 number? And then my follow-up to that, too, is that number kind of larger or smaller than we were expecting, especially compared to, like, what we first saw?
Okay, so first, the concept of sinkholing is not new. I think the idea is to take over a part of the infrastructure, perhaps register some domains which are not used, but they could be used by the botnet, and then basically see systems which are connecting back to that infrastructure. So what we observe, in fact, what Andrew found first, was that there is a number of randomly looking domains which are generated through looking at all the command lines. In fact, the domain lookup using NSLookup tool happened. And so he observed a domain which had a 6 distinct character, always static at the beginning, and then some of the variables at the end. So I went to the actual botnet executable file and tried to find out where exactly is this used. And then I realized it could be an alternative command and control mechanism, which is not unusual for botnets. We've seen previously a lot of other botnets using so-called domain generating algorithm, where they would generate one or more domains based on a particular date, and then they would use that in an attempt to evade some of the detection based on, let's say, domain name or static domain name. So what we did is we basically are able to calculate the domain generating algorithm for a period of a week, and then we registered those domains, and we were able to then kind of get a really good view into the victimology of the systems which were affected by Prometei botnet. So we were able to count the distinct IDs which were called in and distinct IP addresses. So from then on, we could kind of estimate with a pretty decent probability that we are seeing that the network, or at least this version of Prometei botnet, consists of about 10,000 infected systems. So to come up with the finally with the second part of the question, is this larger or smaller than when we first wrote about Prometei? For me, it's a difficult thing to say, because we haven't been able to measure the size of the botnet before we were actually sinkhole it. So you know, we estimated certain amounts of the money that was generated by mining Monero, and it was something in the range of, if I remember correctly, $1,500 per month, which is not a huge amount. I guess it at the time it was probably lower thousands.
You can't sort of like understress the importance that the immense amount of visibility that we had into what was sort of happening with this version in our telemetry or data. We don't always get such a clear picture. So just having all of the additional, command line visibility, the infrastructure still being live, all that extremely helpful in analysis. Not so great, you know, for the victims and the targets, but from a research standpoint, a little bit more informative.
So where do we kind of see Prometei going from here? You guys mentioned in the blog post multiple times that we could see it growing in the future and that we expect this to kind of be an evolving threat. What specific areas do you kind of see it evolving in? Is that based on maybe new targets, new methods, anything like new TTPs, anything like that?
Victimology currently is near universal, other than sort of the Tor exit node, the Russia exclusion that we highlighted. We saw it popping up everywhere. So in terms of victimology expansion, like there isn't a lot of room for it to go anywhere in that sense. But I think the inclusion of a web shell now is interesting. While the web shell we saw itself was pretty straightforward, packaging up, you know, and deploying an entire Apache web server in an obfuscated manner is a bit more ambitious of an action than I think we were previously seeing the things it was doing. Not to mention, as Vani just described, the sort of DGA C2 generator that it has now. And while it could be used as like a simple means of persistence, the sort of like detached nature of the web shell part with the primary bot component, and you know, its enablement of generic command execution and file transfers sort of sets the groundwork to allow the actor not only to expand, but also, if it wanted to, wholly shift or pivot their activity, you know, into something potentially more destructive like ransomware, or burn their whole thing down entirely and just put something completely new on there, you know, so long as the web shell part remained active on the victim host. So I think sort of seeing them attempting stuff like that is a decent indicator that they're looking to continue to adapt and evolve.
Yeah, apart from that, I think I tried when I tried to find other instances of botnet or actual bot, I saw that it's being under active development, because as one of the strings which are encrypted in the body of the botnet is its version. So by decrypting that string, you could see how it's being under active development, because that string is always increased as the new versions are coming out. So and it's obvious that the actors are kind of taking care or notice of the vulnerabilities which are happening. So in the past, we see it trying to spread using Eternal Blue or Eternal Romance, Blue Keep in this version from 2019. So they definitely take care of the new ways of how they can infect other hosts. So definitely we will see them adopting new exploits there.
All right, cool. Well, that's kind of everything I wanted to cover with you guys. I appreciate your time this morning.